Brand 1 Magazin. Das Wirtschaftsmagazin zum Hören. Sonntagmittag auf Detektor FM.
Total waren das mit Liebe zu dritt. Mit Sicherheit etwas, das im 18. oder 19. Jahrhundert jetzt eher kein Thema für die öffentliche Diskussion war. Heute irgendwie schon. Und daran sehen wir, es ändert sich schon etwas in der Gesellschaft um uns herum. Wir glauben ja oft, wir seien heute viel weiter als unsere Vorfahren beispielsweise. Dabei haben wir beim Dating bisher vor allem eines geschafft, die Effizienz immer mehr zu steigern. Doch bringt das auch mehr Lust? Eine Frage, der Moira Weigel nachgeht. Sie ist Historikerin, promoviert und lehrt in Yale und in ihrem Buch The Labor of Love untersucht sie Dating, genauer gesagt, wie sich Dating und die Rituale rundherum ökonomisch im Laufe der Zeit verändert haben. Moira spricht ein wenig Deutsch, das Interview führen wir aber auf Englisch. Zunächst aber erst einmal, hallo in die USA, hallo Moira.
Hallo.
Whenever we think about dating, one point seems to be clear. With all these new technologies, we have managed to reduce risks. Dating is nowadays extremely effective. Is this the reason why it is harder to find the big romance today?
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question, you know? I think that since what I talk about, what I call the invention of dating, you know, the beginning of people starting to go out and meet one another in the way that we call dating in America, there are different technologies that change it. You know, the automobile is a technology that really changes how people go out and meet one another, makes it easier to travel farther, makes it easier for teenagers to be alone together. Cell phones and apps and the things we think of as technology today have changed dating yet again. And I think, as you suggested, they've created this idea that we can find love or find partners efficiently, the way we might call an Uber. So I think that we've seen this theme of technology changing dating all through its history. What we're seeing now is a greater emphasis on convenience and efficiency. And I think that development is ambivalent. You know, it has a good sides and bad sides. On the one hand, for a lot of people, it is a huge help to be able to find other people they might date, you know, for instance, for gay people and lesbians, for divorced older people who might not, you know, want to go out to a bar, might not have time to. On the other hand, as I think you're suggesting, and as I argue in my book, the idea that these tools could make it sort of fast and easy to find love is misguided. It both doesn't work, and I don't think it would be desirable to make love and romance efficient if we could.
Obviously, we can find not only dates, but even sex faster and faster, as you just mentioned, with one swipe. This seems to be a killer for romance, or not, one that our grandfathers and grandmothers didn't have to face. Do we push desire forward at the expense of romance?
I think we do, and I think you're right. It's funny, as you were asking that question, and on the one hand, there's something that's very unromantic about an app like Tinder or even OkCupid. You know, this idea that whenever it's easy for you, you can just find someone to go home with if you want to. On the other hand, it strikes me that there's something that's still very romantic about this idea that you could just shop around and look really hard and that this technology could help you find the perfect person, you know, like the perfect pair of sneakers. It's almost like it is a romanticism, but what it romanticizes is shopping instead of relationships between people. I think that basically, yes, it's a romance killer to have apps like Tinder and OkCupid. The way they're deployed has more to do with capitalism and with shopping and commodities than with how humans actually connect sexually and spiritually.
Usually, technical improvements, change, progress starts within the higher classes. You say when it comes to dating, the change is driven by the not-so-wealthy, not-so-privileged people. Why?
Well, it's certainly true at the beginning of dating that that is the case. So in this moment that I call the invention of dating, which is the 1890s, before that, courtship rituals, the way people met up and paired off, had always taken place in private spaces and spaces that were controlled by parents or by, you know, priests or rabbis, by community authorities. That's what I think of when I think of the Jane Austen scenario, or for you guys, the Leiden des jungen Werther scenario. You know, you're a young man goes to a home where a young woman is and meets her. That starts to change around the 1890s in America for a few reasons. You have large numbers of young people moving to cities looking for work. And among those people, you particularly have young women. And when you think about it, in those old-timey novels, it's such a big deal when, you know, there's one new guy in a Jane Austen novel, or, you know, one new person shows up. And then you think about, for a woman, you know, one of these poor women who moves to New York or Chicago or Philadelphia, just how many men they'd meet every single day if they're working as a waitress or, you know, as a sales girl in a store in one of these new jobs that hadn't really existed before or that women hadn't held before. So it's very much a working class phenomenon at the beginning of its history. People are driven to it out of necessity. These are immigrants, poor women, African American women who don't have family homes with these kinds of fancy parlors, you know, where a man could come visit them. Sometimes, anyway, don't even have family around to do that for them. And so they're the ones who really innovate and invent this practice of dating. And indeed, the first chapter of my book is all research based on these police records and morality and vice commissions, where authorities, legal authorities, looked and said, you know, these women are letting men buy them dinner and then maybe going home with them, that looks like prostitution, which is so strange to us. But when you think about it, if you'd never had that situation where men and women interacted in public in that way, it made sense. And by the way, that expression date, people use because it has to do with work. You know, it's like you make a date because you pick a time after work when you're going to meet someone. Again, for the leisure classes, the more moneyed classes where women weren't working outside the homes yet, there wasn't that same concept of time that you had to pick a time and place to meet. That innovation really starts from the less privileged, as you're saying, and it's not until the late 19-teens or the 1920s, when you get more and more middle-class women going to college in the United States.
To sum it up, you can say modern dating is strongly connected to emancipation and feminism?
Absolutely. And you know, the real reason I got so excited about this book and wanted to write about this topic was that I discovered that, you know, this history of dating, which I got interested in precisely because of the theme we were talking about at the beginning of our conversation, where so many people are always saying, you know, dating is over or romance is over, the younger generation is doing things wrong. That was what made me interested in dating. But then what I discovered very quickly was that the history of dating completely overlaps with the history of women in the workforce. And in that sense, it's just absolutely inseparably tied to the idea that young women are going out in public and earning money and have more choice over where they go and when. You know, a young man doesn't need to come to your parents' house and wait to see if your mom will let him see you. I think that there are plus and minus sides to it. I think in some senses it brings, you know, the institution of dating clearly has given women a lot more choice and brought a lot more freedom. I think it also creates new pressures in different ways, you know, whether those are pressures about how you should look to be desirable if you have to win a partner on your own rather than count on your parents to find a partner.
You just mentioned the parallels to the world of labor and business. The rules seem to be the same. Stay flexible, be prepared for the new. There's not the single decision for the whole life anymore. Did dating influence the job world, or was it the other way around?
You know, I love that question. And I think, like a typical academic, I'll equivocate and say it's very hard to say exactly. Work influences dating in a couple different ways. One is very sort of straightforward in that the way we date, the way we meet people, is shaped by how we work. How many hours a day we work influences how much time we have to meet people after work. I joke in the book about how in all, you know, in these old-timey Hollywood movies, you always see a man say to a woman, "I'll pick you up at 6, or can I pick you up at 7? And today people just text each other and say, "Hey, you free?" And that, you know, often is cited as evidence that we're not romantic anymore. But as a historian of labor, I would just look at that and say, you know, that's because work doesn't end at 5 anymore. You know, you can't say, "I'll pick you up at 6 because our schedules are much more flexible. You can't just assume that everyone is done at 6. What interests me more almost is this thing that's a little bit harder to measure, but I think very powerful, that you were alluding to, which is that the ways we think about work and value shape sort of the ways we think psychologically and spiritually about our romantic relationships. In the 1950s, you know, the great American era of full employment, where everyone has a steady job for their whole lives, no accident, I argue, that we see this form of dating that people call going steady, where you have one boyfriend or one girlfriend for a long time, and it's supposed to be sort of stable. Today, in this era of gig economy and freelancing and flexibility, people tend to use that kind of language to talk about their love lives too, and people talk about wanting to optimize their love lives or, you know, be efficient. To find examples of where it goes the other way around, where ideas about dating influence ideas about the economy, it's a bit less immediately obvious, but I think there are. One I get into in the book is this idea of free love, the ways that these sexual radicals and sexual revolutionaries of the 60s and 70s talk about the idea that, you know, everyone should be able to want what they want, and no social institution should tell you that you can't pursue what you desire. You know, really the language they use often now sounds like economic language. So this is a language that in the 1970s and 1980s will start to be used about economic market, what we now call neoliberalism. So I think we see it go both ways. Of course, I don't know if you have this same conversation in Germany, but in America now, we also talk endlessly about this idea that you have to love your work and that you should feel passion for your work. And, you know, you should do what you love. And I think that there's this growing expectation that, you know, even if you have a job that might not be so interesting, that you're supposed to love it. I would argue quite destructively in some cases. I think in the U.S., again, maybe I always think Europeans tend to be more enlightened about work than Americans are. So maybe you don't have the same problem. But I think that this language of love applied to work actually becomes a kind of pretext or an excuse to ask people to work under worse and worse conditions and to tell them that if they don't like that, there's something wrong with them.
As you just mentioned the economy, dating was always hard work and was never cheap. But is it really an important factor in capitalism?
I think when we think about the different ways that dating and sexual and romantic attraction have driven economic growth, it's a very major factor. I mean, look, dating is, first of all, the institution that we use, that we rely on to reproduce the world. In terms of the businesses around dating, you know, early in the 20th century, when these kinds of entertainment industries are first developing, it's very visible. Dating is a huge force driving the popularization of restaurants and movies and theme parks. You know, it drives the fashion industry and the cosmetics industry because people feel pressure to be desirable. Today, I'd say it's a huge driver of social media and sort of different online industries. In terms of the sort of larger philosophical issue, you know, the dynamics of capitalism and market growth depend upon constantly identifying areas that aren't enclosed yet. So you have to find things that aren't part of the economy yet and make them part of the economy. So, you know, in an earlier era, marriage was a legal and financial transaction, and marriage has always been a legal financial transaction. It involves the property of both families coming together, of both individuals. It has economic consequences. However, courtship, you know, that process of getting to know one another, getting to know people you might marry, money had never changed hands during that process. That was something that happened in your home and private space. What dating does is moves that whole courtship process into public space and makes it such that money has to be exchanged. So now if you want to meet someone, you can't just go to their house and say hi. You have to buy a drink for them or buy them dinner or buy a movie ticket. What the invention of dating did was it took that process of courtship and enclosed it within the economy and made it part of the economy, and in the process unlocked a tremendous source of value and economic growth.
Dating as we know it maybe was invented by the Americans. You lived in Germany for quite a time, so please help us out with a mirror. How do we Germans date?
To my great regret, I never had a serious German boyfriend, so I don't know as much as I would like to. I joke, I never learned the dirty words in German because, you know, I was always just studying Hegel and Kant or whatever at Humboldt and not doing proper research that I should have been doing. There are a few different things that are very distinctively American, I think, about the institution of dating. One is this emphasis on consumption and consumer goods and going out and shopping around. I think also the emphasis on work, this belief in individual work bringing happiness, you know, that any individual, if you make yourself pretty enough and appealing enough and have cute enough pictures on OkCupid or Tinder, that you'll find the person of your dreams. There's something very American about that. I do also think the idea of social mixing is kind of American as well. I think that dating is very wrapped up in it. For a long time, dating was a source of social mobility and class mobility, and it involved, you know, often people of different classes would marry one another. I think it has a lot to do with this American idea in the 20th century of a wide open world where anyone can become anything and you meet a stranger. My impression from my European friends is that often dating took place more within social groups, you know, where people knew each other already. You become involved with friends of friends. There's a little bit less emphasis on that idea of like the great individual adventure and going out alone and meeting someone. You know, I think there's this stereotype that Americans are very, very friendly and like on the surface and very easy to get to know on the surface and very hard to get to know deeply. And that Germans are sort of, you know, umgekehrt. It's like the opposite of that. I always thought it was fascinating that in German there was that distinction between Bekannte and Freund. And it's like in America, you tend to say anyone you once met ever is your friend. But my impression is that with the arrival of dating apps in Europe, that it's becoming more similar. Your listeners will know better than I whether that's true or not.
Romantik ist harte Arbeit und Dating ist nicht nur in historischer Perspektive etwas Ökonomisches. Über diese Ökonomie des Datings haben wir mit Moira Weigel gesprochen. In der aktuellen Brand 1 gibt es noch ein längeres Interview mit ihr. Warum? Weil die Historikerin das Buch The Labor of Love geschrieben hat. Ich sage an dieser Stelle vielen Dank, Moira, für das Gespräch und beste Grüße in die USA.
Thank you. Take care.
Brand 1 Magazin. Das Wirtschaftsmagazin zum Hören. Sonntagmittag auf Detektor FM.